Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcha.
We've been playing games again.
We have.
We always play games.
Playing games forever.
Yeah.
That's
the crushing inevitability of us having played games.
Well, I suppose at some point we'll die. It's going to be a cheery one today, isn't it? I'm in an odd mood.
Yeah, I've got loads of games to complain about as well.
Settle down for an hour of largely turgid ranting then. I'm going to open up with Secret World. We're playing Secret World on the Mondays with a static group still going. I have to admit I'm not playing it at any other time during the week at all, which to me is generally not a great sign.
No.
If I'm not, you know, that taken to the point where I devote spare time to playing it. But we're doing all right. We are doing some of the instant stuff in there. The dungeons, whatever the hell they call them in there. The little purple quests, there seems to be one in each zone and possibly a few others at the far end. And we've done Polaris, which is a wrecked shipping container, you know, Solomon Island, where there's like all nasty things coming up out of the sea and the fog and everyone's a zombie and about a million other things have gone wrong at once. Well, a nearby shipping container was dragged off course and wrecked and beaten up, and we get in the black helicopters to go and find out why.
Was it aliens?
It's tentacly sea god monsters from the beyond the edge of space and time thing.
Ah, sushi.
Yeah. And we did all right on that. We've done it before. We've gotten into the habit where we've got Cthulhu on farm now, which is nice.
Ugh.
I know. MMOs rob us of everything in the end, don't they?
Yeah, it's like the board game, Arkham Horror.
Yeah.
The
sanity is a stat.
Yeah.
Okay.
You really don't quite understand the point.
You. Nope. So, yeah, we get in there, five-man it up, we go in, we work our way around the wrecked shipping containers, beating off various types of sea monster, and then at the end of it all, we give Cthulhu a good beat down, and we can consistently do that now. We do still tend to lose one or two people in the final boss fight, but whoever's left manages to finish it off. So perhaps our technique and skills and attributes could do
a suggestion.
Bit more work.
Yeah. Don't die as much.
Okay, we'll give that a go.
Yeah. It's an unusual strategy that most people don't remember.
I think you might be onto something there. Yeah. All the time we've been going in there and just dying, and I've been thinking, racking my brains as to what was going wrong, and I haven't really worked it out, but of course not dying as much. Yeah, we're doing it. But so that's the first out of several. We're on to Zone 2, Savage Coast, and that one's got a dungeon as well. It's
one
you pick up at the Overlook Motel, which is distinct and different from all the rest of the zombie-based sea god monster horror of the rest of the zone, in that it's all lava and magma and demons.
I hate lava. Lava in games. Who wants lava? I'm going to rant about lava in one of my games.
Almost within sort of 100 yards into the second zone of the game, we come across our first major demonic infestation, and good job we're all superheroes powered by bees, because otherwise things would get quite awkward. Mm. Yeah, I think as far as I can determine, and to be honest, the backstory doesn't hold up to a lot of light of day stark glaring. The reason that we're all superpowered super people is that we were asleep and some bees flew into our mouths one night in a hotel somewhere.
That's the plot of Dead Rising as well.
Is it? Yeah. Well, anyway, then all the little glowy things, which I'll talk about in a bit, are little honeycombs as well, and there's a bee theme to it all. So we're basically the
bees. How does that fit in with the bees all dying off?
They're all dying off because they're all inside us, you see, driving us around. I like to imagine that I'm actually hollow and have a little cockpit with like little controls, and there's actually a bee literally piloting me about doing this stuff.
I think
that would be awesome.
Bee arms don't work on little controls. You can't see little joysticks for bee arms, can you?
You'd have to work on a different kind of control mechanism for a bee to be able to operate a remote-controlled life-size human being.
Yeah.
Like in that robot, that robot in Doctor Who with all the little people in, but with bees.
Or that stupid robot that was hastily introduced at the end to get around the stupid
Shana plot device robot. Yeah.
The corner they had written themselves into. And by they, I mean he.
I think in the Secret World, we're all those powered by bees, yes.
Okay.
Don't argue
with
me. Are
you all
the
queens, or is it drones?
I think it's probably all drones. There's probably a queen somewhere. That's where we're getting all our mission directives from, probably. That's why the quest tracker.
Incoming
transmission from the hive.
Do you feel the need to sort of hang around together and dance to tell people where to go?
Yes, Wish does this. Wish, one of our regular members of the team there, Wish, has done a lot of this before, and and doesn't tend to do the voice chat thing much, so communicates largely by jumping up and down in a place where we haven't noticed where the next thing we need to go is. So we've actually gotten into the habit of, like, while we're sort of traipsing through these dungeons doing the short bus day trip that is our usual escapades, we've gotten into the habit of going, hang on, where's Wish? And you sort of turn around, the Wish is there jumping up and down on the spot. You think, oh, okay, we should go over there, I think. So invaluable having some people
okay,
there. And Welsh
yeah.
Troll as well. Welsh Troll knows his way around the secret world. So it's good that we are our little organised day trip has some sort of supervisors who've actually know what the hell's going on, because otherwise we'd be in a terrible state.
Otherwise you'd still be on the first quest.
We
really.
Would still be on the first quest. It's something I'm going to talk about in a topic show coming up, but the secret world is quite difficult as MMOs go.
That's because it has lots and lots of hard questions.
Yeah, well, it's not so much that. I think it's just the they've ratcheted up the basic combat, and the flexibility of the skill bar allows you to make some colossal mistakes and all that sort of thing as well. So we're doing all right. But yes, we managed to successfully finish the second dungeon. I can't even remember what the linked quest for it is, but basically there's a freestanding floating door in a pool of magma in this hotel, and you open it and
go
inside.
Can't have magma in a hotel. That's a bad... guests are going to get hurt.
There's cracks in the ground, lots of orange glow, flames, you know. I mean, convection, whatever.
I've heard of underfloor heating.
Yeah, big time. But this door takes you through to hell. And I'm thinking, we're only on Dungeon 2, and already we've punched out Cthulhu, and now we're romping through hell.
Wow.
Decimating the inhabitants. The basic format is a big, long, windy canyon corridor of spiky magma rocks. Occasionally there's some environmental hazards with these big, weird, hellish machines. There's a bit of a clockwork steampunk thing going on in there with all cogs everywhere.
Is hell meant to be steampunk?
I don't know. Hell can do what it likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think hell gets modernised every so often?
I think it would have to, really, wouldn't it? You have to, move forward with the times with, large-scale production methods. There's far, far more human beings nowadays than there was back in the olden days. Orders of millions and billions. So you're going to need to modernise your machinery.
I've got an urge to go listen to Old Harry's Game again.
That's pretty much where I take my cues for it all from. Yeah, fantastic Radio 4 comedy there. We went through. I tell you what, I do like the format that they do with the bosses and the dungeons in Secret World, which is essentially almost no yard trash and almost nothing between each boss fight. It is literally a chain of about five or six boss fights in a row, and then you're done. A little bit of walking around and admiring the scenery. And they've got these machines that go off and do big AoE blasts on a sort of timed sequence, so there's a bit of footwork involved getting around the place. Largely it's just single bosses with very large and very impressive set pieces. Some of it gets pretty intense. There's one boss fight where you're in this corridor and there's things along the edges of the corridors which blow up in sequence, so you have to move up and down the corridor in time with the things going off along the edges. And then the very far end of the corridor is a big wall of flame which is slowly advancing towards you as you're doing the boss fight. So by the end of it, we were just pressed right up against this force field at the far end, wailing away on the boss's last sort of 5% of health, and that got insane.
I've got a question.
Yeah?
Why would anyone design a room like that?
I don't know. It's hell. Who knows? It's the last boss fight that was the real problem, though. It's an immense running around arena thing, and this boss just keeps throwing out an absolute metric ton of placed AoE templates that you have to get out of the fire. So
yeah.
it's a constant cycle sequence of large sort of array of orange circles that go out and are static. You don't want to be standing on those, because when they blow up, they'll do lots of damage. Then also he drops a load of red ones, and these red ones are mobile, so they follow you around. They literally chase you, and then if they catch up with you, bang, big bang death there. He's got his own, usual array of vast stomp attacks and big AoE cone attacks and breathing fire and all the rest of it. And also he's invulnerable unless you drag him through a particular and inexplicably appearing golden pillar of light that shows up in the arena every so often. We think that was sent by the bees, you see.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Typically all golden light type phenomena are bee-based. But so that was an insane fight. I think we wiped the first time. But that's not so bad, because the respawn point's right next to it. Obviously, it resets his health and lets you have another go. And you can even use the respawn points as repair your equipment points as well. So you could just keep wailing on it as long as you've got the patience, to be honest. But we managed to do it in the second go in the end. And he was down to... Oh, God, we lost three of us, I think, during the fight. There's just two folks found. I think it was Welsh Troll and Wish again at the very end, just frantically kiting this thing around and desperately trying to self-heal themselves and each other.
It does always help to have competent people on the
team.
Yeah,
and we were. It lets you do spectator mode if you're dead.
Oh, that's good.
Which is nice. So there's me. I think it was me, Torag, I forget who else was there. I think it might have been Svaye, but we were just running around, you know, watching on this spectator mode, which lets you just switch different camera angles and follow people around, watching the remaining blood magicians desperately chasing around and trying to keep themselves alive and stuff, while this hellish monster's trying to swat them. And we're just shouting lots of helpful advice, which I'm sure they found helpful.
I can't imagine heckle mode.
There is a heckle mode on the boss fight, so if you wipe early on in the proceedings, you get to watch and throw helpful advice to the remaining people on TeamSpeak or Mumble or whatever. The boss had 18 hit points out of about 89,000 hit points at one point, and they couldn't manage to stop long enough to just throw that last bit. So I was just shouting all sorts of helpful advice, like sneeze at him, throw a rock,
make him stub his toe,
throw dust in his face. Yeah, we got through in the end. Well, largely they got through, but it all counts because I was there and helped for the early parts of it. I'm trying to tank in there, but it's hard to tell what any kind of class is or what any kind of level is in that game. It goes out of its way to try and be all different, and no, we don't have levels, we don't have Trinity, we don't have classes, when they're totally lying. They absolutely do, you know, and it's up to you to try and assemble an effective tank and an effective healer out of the huge Guild Wars style plethora of skills that are available. The stuff all does has levels as well. They just don't have the decency to put any numbers on anything, which is annoying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then it's not all that revolutionary in that regard. It tries to, you know, do things a bit differently. And
yeah, but when is
that difference a good thing, or is that just obfuscating what you need to know to get this kind of gameplay done?
Well, that's a good question, because, you know, when is the last time an MMO actually did do something different? Is it always a good thing?
Yeah, I suppose it's all going to be about essentially wailing away on a health bar of some form or another at the end of the day. That's why I quite like the investigation missions, which we haven't really done one of in Secret World in recent weeks.
That's because there's only one at the start and that's it.
No, there's loads in there. There's a couple we haven't had a start at yet, but we just haven't really gotten around to it. I think we've been trying to find some useful ways to get XP on board and level up and try some of this dungeon stuff. So it's good. It was good. It was really draining, though. It was one of those, you know, sort of quarter past 10. Oh, I think I might go to bed, actually. Yeah. You know, so, but we got it done. So we're 2 for 2 so far. There's another one in the Blue Mountain region. I think that involves time travel and ancient Norsemen or something. I don't know. We're going to have to go and have a look. Apparently, it's quite a notoriously difficult one as well. Pretty much everything's quite difficult in that game. It really sort of slams you quite hard into a wall of difficulty. It's not like most normal MMOs where you're, you know, quest hub to quest hub, working your way up the levels in quite a smooth and agreeable fashion. A bit like a, you know, a quiet country walk after a Sunday lunch or something. This really does make you have to work quite hard very quickly. It ramps up halfway through Savage Coast. You're starting to find that if you've just been doing a bit of casual questing, you are going to be underpowered by the time you get to the second zone.
Yeah.
So it's one that I'm increasingly getting the idea that you need to do everything. You need to find every single quest giver and do everything that's on offer, and so try and do some of them a couple of times as well, which is no ideal, really.
No, that's definitely not.
It's a design decision they've taken. It's a hard MMO. So dance bosses, pretty much everything in the hell instance is quite dancey.
I don't like dance bosses.
Well, as a tank, I don't like dance bosses, because tanking for me is about, if not technically, certainly spiritually, it's about hunkering down on the spot and being the immovable rock. And when it's very difficult to do that if it's making you get out of the glowy circle every 2 seconds, you know? You have to keep moving shop, setting up elsewhere. I love the sensation of being a tank where you can just literally turtle down on the spot and, you know, everything's trying to beat the hell out of you and nothing's getting through. That's solidity. So I tend to not enjoy very mobile fights, which a lot of the stuff in Secret World tends to be. It's go here, now run away from one of these, now stand over here, now run away from some of those. And when this thing goes, they have some of the monsters in there have attacks which the correct response to the big telegraphed wind-up is to get as close to it as possible.
Okay.
Which is weird. I don't know if this happens in World of Warcraft raiding or at the top end or whatever, whether it's some startling innovation or I don't know. But basically a big green dome about 6 feet wide appears around the monster, and you have to be inside it, not outside it, because everything outside the dome will get the big insta alpha hit, you know. So it's knowing which ones are those. Do you have to run in? Do you have to run out? You have to keep away from those. You have to not trip off of that. You know, it's there's a lot of fiddle, a lot of dance, a lot more so. I mean, it sort of reminds me of some of the more annoying stuff we experienced in Mines of Moria, you know, in the deeper end of that, where they just started getting a bit ridiculous with their dance revolution bosses. You remember the big orc fight where you had the room divided into four coloured corners and you had to check his tooltip and go and stand in the right corner? It was like some weird game of It's a Knockout or just some Frontier or something. Not a huge fight against a terrifying monster.
Yeah, that was towards the end when we were getting a bit fed up with that game.
One of the reasons we got a bit fed up with it, I think. I've written Glowy Fever there. Yeah, so there we are in Hell, and it's quite a startling and fascinating and interesting map design, world design level to it. It's worth a look. But mostly we were just obsessed with finding the glowies in there, which is the in-game lore objects. We like to chase those down, try and collect them all, you know.
Yes.
So we tend to get a bit sidetracked, you know. So I suppose it helps defend against the idea of the horror of where we actually are and what we're trying to do. But I've written Brief Visit to Egypt there. Yes, Faye's gotten into the game quite well and gone on ahead to scout out new lands for us, and he invited us to come and have a look at Egypt, which is the second land, I suppose. You spend the first three zones on Solomon Island, which is somewhere off the North Atlantic American coast, sort of Rhode Island, Maine, that sort of thing. Then you go to Egypt for three zones. I'm not quite sure whereabouts, somewhere down Nile. And then
most places in Egypt are on the Nile.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's in the desert.
Yeah, but that's just desert.
Yeah, so I guess it's in the Nile. And then there's Transylvania as well. I guess there's a three-zone set there as well.
I wonder what's going to happen there.
Is it vampires?
It'd be nice if it wasn't. You just go to Transylvania and they never mention vampires.
Yeah. Don't use the V word. A lot of the NPCs try not to use the Z word on Solomon Island. But yeah, we had a brief go at Egypt. It's bonkers. It's absolutely hellish. And I'm wondering if this is just the steep levelling curve and we need to go away and drudge out more stuff on Solomon Island for another 8 to 15 weeks, or is this just the shape of the things to come? Is the game going to be that hard? It's just loads of, like, I don't think they're zombies. I think they're, like, desert-crazed gunmen. Those are people running around with assault rifles, you know, monsters. They're a lot faster than zombies, but then all the zombies on Solomon Island are fast anyway. It's just a slightly different texture job. You know, these people aren't visibly zombified, but they're still coming after you with claws and guns and things. And then there's loads of desert monsters and exploding scorpions and all sorts of crazy, and I'm just thinking, my God, now I know what I've got to look forward to. Perhaps I might just, you know, relax in Blue Mountain a bit more. It's a game that ramps it up pretty hard. I wonder how much of it is that it's just a question of hitting the right cookie cutter build and ploughing into the right number of AP and SP skill points, you know, what passes for their levels and XP. I don't know. I just not feel, I mean, part of me is really feeling really quite stubborn about The Secret World, because I personally do not believe anyone has ever finished it.
Not got to the end?
No, I don't think anyone's done it. I've seen a few people wandering around in the Panopticon outfit, which is the gear, the cosmetic outfit unlock you get for opening every single skill in the wheel, which is a pretty heavy job. But I'm still thinking, even if you had every single skill in the wheel and all of your bars to 10, you're still you, and you still can only take 7 skills. And I suspect if the curve we've been experiencing difficulty-wise is anything to go by the time you get to Transylvania, you're just going to be being one hit by sparrows. You know, I just don't think anyone's ever made it to the end.
I'm pretty sure they must.
Please correct me. I'd be fascinated to hear of anyone who'd actually completed the end zone of Transylvania and whatever the hell story boss thing happens there. I don't know. But I personally don't believe anyone's done it, so I intend to be the first. I will be the first person to finish The Secret World. It's turning into stubbornness for me now. This is not really so much a game about pleasure. It's a game about, well, I'm damned if I'm going to let this thing beat me.
It's going to be like Star Trek Online.
It's
again
turning into one of those unhealthy obsessions that so amuse people who listen to me ranting about this stuff. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, they're so fun.
But it's possible that the rest of the group will fall apart well before I reach that point. So I don't know. I mean, we're still ticking along, but it does seem to be just about enough people to fill the group and a few more now. So I don't know. We'll see. But it doesn't seem to be relenting, and there's no sense that if we just put in a bit more work now, things will get better. I just think it's always going to get more and more difficult and harsh, and whether that's something I want to do or not, I don't know yet. But I'm feeling like I ought to. MMOs are my life. They're all I do. I don't have anything else. And if I can't do this, what am I?
In need of a hobby.
Do you want to talk about something else?
I'm going to talk about Banished.
Okay.
Which is the rather fabulous town-building, medieval, mass genocide simulator. So I was playing this quite a lot for a couple of days again. It's one of those games where you can't just play for 5 minutes.
Okay.
And the problem I have with all of these builders...
It's pretty much every game I have.
...is, you know, I can't really go back to save games either.
Oh.
I always want to start again and do it better when I come back.
Oh, wow. So it's a sort of system you set up and set running that goes wrong right at the start.
Well, no, it goes wrong repeatedly as you go along as well. But there's always something I want to do better.
Oh, okay. But you don't feel the game is unplayable unless you keep restarting?
No, no, you could keep going.
This is just your own sense of perfectionism, right? Okay.
Yeah, just my own weirdness. I have developed a slight problem with the game.
Though. Yeah.
It doesn't go anywhere. It's the same problem that all of these games has.
Well, you've had your fun at that point,
haven't you? Bigger and bigger and bigger and then you all get wiped out due to randomness.
Hmm.
And this happened quite a lot. My town was really good. It was quite successful.
Have you not won at that point, then?
Well, yeah, but when? Do you win when you've got 50 people in your town and it's all working?
So it doesn't have a set. It doesn't have a set victory condition as such. Yeah. You have to decide when you've done well and when you've had enough, I suppose.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I built my town. It went up well. Then I didn't rotate my crops enough.
Oops.
And there was a slight population crash. And the few couples that remained were able to build up the population again. And they didn't have any housing problems because there were lots of spare houses.
Mm.
It gave everyone a chance to just take a step back and become incredibly inbred.
Right.
And so I built it back up again. Then something else went wrong. And they ran out of food and my population crashed. And then I was down to two people who stubbornly would not have a baby.
Oh, that's a problem.
Mainly because they were both women.
To be honest, I think if you've got just two people, it's going to be hard work repopulating from there anyway. You need, 150 or so for a stable gene pool of sorts.
Yeah, well, I managed with about six people before. But,
fair enough.
Yes, yeah, apparently they didn't even get on, let alone want to try and do the biological impossibility of have a baby together. Mm,
fine, well, we'll both be extinct together then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
seems unreasonable.
They both died. They actually lived at the other side of the village. It was a bit weird. Never talked to each other.
Yeah,
so they all died of old age.
Death.
And they were surviving quite well. One of them was cutting firewood, and the other one was gathering stuff out in the woods all day.
Yeah.
And then they would live quite well.
Hmm.
But, it was just an inevitability of their
times.
Death.
Yeah.
So just I played through to the end, and I watched them get older and older and older. Living out their lives until they died.
Good. Right.
Yeah.
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 Positive gaming experiences this week.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cheerful. And not at all watching the village there with nobody left in it.
Mm. Could you not import some people from the neighbouring town?
I could have done with importing two men, really. Or just one man would have done. traders were coming.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, traders were coming to the trading port.
There is other places.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Would they impregnate themselves so that they could carry on the village? No.
A sense of duty.
That's just so selfish when people won't. Yeah.
Take one for the team, I believe the phrase is.
Yeah, I believe that would be take one. It was tragic. But the problem I have with the game
is... So you're
is
quite a rubbish feudal lord then, really.
I am the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
I really am the worst.
So when we revert to savagery in the next 50 years, because everything falls apart because no one can be bothered to do anything or fixing or make new things, then don't put you in charge.
No, put me in charge. I'm fine. I'm always the last one alive.
Well, I suppose that works well from your perspective.
Yeah. And occasionally I would do something dumb, like forget to that I've told the blacksmith to go do something else because we had enough tools at that stage.
He's just frantically knocking out hammers like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And,
everyone's got five or six hammers.
I had thousands of spare hammers waiting around. Okay. So I told him to go off and do
some
farming.
Very much like the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah. Yeah, and then after a couple of years of that, we had no hammers left. And suddenly that's where the second population crash came.
Right.
Because all the food production suddenly became incredibly inefficient because they had no tools. And this poor guy couldn't... I sent him back to go make some hammers, but he couldn't make hammers fast enough.
Too few hammers now.
Yeah, there was no hammers because they'd used up the massive supply of hammers we had. I think we got cocky and we used
complacent with your vast hammer
stockpile.
We
made our hammers disposable, I think.
Did you have a hammer mountain? Like you used to tell us about economic European stockpiles of butter and stuff.
In fact...
Actual mountain of
if
hammers.
If there was anyone left to... recount the history of the village, they would have referred to that era as Hammer Time.
Yea, verily, and it did pass that it was hammer time.
That was a long way to go for that joke.
Wow. Yeah. Did you ruin an entire 5-hour game of Banished just to set that joke up?
No, but I did. I
bonus.
Did. It was the thing that sprung to my mind as I watched them all die.
God.
Yeah, the problem I have with Banished, and I don't know how to fix it, is it is purely a game about not getting anything wrong.
Yeah, there's no...
It's not a game about doing something well.
There's no getting anything right. It's just,
I put loads of hours into it, and it's fabulous and fantastic, and I love it. It's just... I think I might have a problem with the strategy genre.
I think basic problem sounds like there's no appreciable win condition, no series of missions or whatever, which normally puts, you know, gives you, normally tells you to stop playing at some point.
It needs some form of campaign, really.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of a game.
Perhaps that's not what people want. Perhaps people just enjoy the unrelenting savagery and drudge of it all.
You know, at the end of Civilization where it says, do you want to keep playing?
Yes.
I want that screen.
Yes. Some way to objectively say, no, I've done well enough at this game, yeah. Well, yeah. Otherwise, you end up finding yourself channeling yourself into it over and over until you will eventually hit some sort of equilibrium, falling apart, and then that's that.
Yeah, so that
given long enough, any game of Banished will go wrong, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my bad experience as being a bear.
Okay, right. Okay, I'm going to talk about Assassin's Creed 3, which I am still enjoying. It's turned into... I've written buddy movie there. I've got to the point where Haytham's turned up again, and you, Connor, there are ending up... Apparently, for some reason, you work out that actually the Templars and the Assassins both need to work together to overthrow British rule in the colonies.
Yeah, I can't help but feel at that point you were just sort of trying to bring in Templar rule.
I don't know. Well, the thing is, I've been murdering so many redcoats up to that point, and I thought they were all Templars. Apparently, no, Templars also want the thing to go through. And I thought, oh, God, now what's going wrong then? These are all innocent people, and I've got the wrong thing in this big conspiracy war thing.
The general rule is, if you're on the same side as your enemy,
yes,
on any opinion,
yes,
it probably means something's gone wrong.
Quite. I don't know. So there's a lot of intermediate plot missions now I'm doing where Haytham's coming along, and he's a fantastic heckler. It's brilliant, because... He's basically, he's the protagonist's father, you see, and you've been reunited as well, you know, you start off as enemies and you end up sort of getting to know each other a bit as you're capering along the rooftops and blowing up powder dumps and so on. And he's such a sarcastic git. It's brilliant. I'm enjoying that immensely, the dynamic there. Because Connor has got all the personality of a block of wood, basically.
He does.
So the reintroduction of Haytham into the main plotline is a much needed thing for the dramatic enjoyability of it all. I've written mini game guild. I'm up and running with all the send the assassins off to places you're never going to actually see for real and get them to roll a dice and come back with some stuff. So, but that takes the form of you liberating all the colonies of the Americas, which is all done through menus mostly and duty officer away missions.
One of the fabulous things that the fourth game does is adds an iPad interface to that.
I'm just getting a bit tired of that mini game in total, to be honest. It was quite an interesting thing turning up in Brotherhood for Assassin's Creed 2. You know, what's going on in the rest of the world whilst I'm doing all this running around in Rome, and it turns out here's a big old list of places, and that's all great. But then you start, it becomes less and less great because you just, all it does is sort of remind you of all the other cool places you could be going to visit that you don't get to in this film.
Like revolutionary France.
Well, exactly. And it's...
reference to the next game.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because some rumours for 5 now, is it?
It's going to be in France.
It's going to be in France?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I suppose.
Revolution.
Yeah, all of that. What major historical time of turmoil and bloodshed can we also attribute to the Assassins and Templars?
I don't know where they're going to put the boats.
Buggering
though.
About.
Yeah, Paris doesn't have a lot of navigable... Yeah, it's got the one. And my cannons aren't going to be able to do a lot of damage from just that one
river. I don't think you'll be allowed to keep the boat.
I'm keeping the boat.
No, it's all going to be horses and things.
No, I'm keeping the boat.
Fair enough. I wouldn't want to take the boat away from you. On the subject of boats, I've written Sea Battle. No idea what's going on there. Yeah, I don't know if I understand or click with the boat stuff in three. It's just like, you know, you sort of sail about and fire off some cannons, and sometimes boats sink and sometimes they don't, and apparently you have to push X to duck and that stops the cannonballs wrecking your boat for somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Everyone else loves the combat. Everyone said that the best thing about combat.
That thing was apparently so brilliant that that's what the entire fourth game is about. But I don't know. It's all right, you know. Much rather be capering around rooftops stabbing people.
I think you're the only person.
I probably am, yeah. Maybe, perhaps the implementations. I don't know. It's just, it seems a bit arbitrary. I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of trying to line up, trying to sort the cannons out, trying to fire and stuff. And I'm just thinking, I remember Pirates of the Burning Sea. That was quite fun. Which had broadly similar gameplay, but not nearly as swish or polished.
Yeah. Yeah.
As, in fact, Sven with two Vs is still playing it at the moment. Apparently Portalarium's the company now, and they brought it back from Sony and are running it again. So you can still play Pirates of the Burning Sea.
You never see it mentioned.
No, it's quite a low-profile thing, but yeah. It's there and working.
Yeah, the naval combat does get better in the fourth one. They refine it quite a lot.
Yeah, I suppose they'll have to, really. It feels a bit disconnected from anything else and a bit mini-gamey, you know, which I suppose it is. And it's quite a fun mini-game, certainly more fun than the sending the assassins away to places to roll a dice and come back with some stuff bit, which is not a great mini-game. I've written AC1's Never-Ending Slaughter Theater. Yeah. Is this something you found? The sword fighty stuff against redcoats in New York and Boston, it never ends.
No, it keeps going on and on.
And I thought that was a massive problem from the first game, Assassin's Creed 1, which I thought they'd fixed quite well in the second game.
They had. People would start running away after a while.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you come running around the corner with your little street, you're essentially what are basically bobbies on the beat, walk around the corner to find 15 or 16 bodies on the floor and a bloke in a white cloak with a sword in his hand glaring at you. And yeah, why wouldn't you run away? But no, they'd never run away in this one. Sometimes they'll run and get help occasionally, but that's not really so much about the fight ending.
That's making the problem worse.
Yeah, that's them going to get more of them. And they patrol in really big groups in this, in three as well. You know, sort of columns of redcoats, 10, 12 deep, with a drummer at the back and an officer and those big Scottish fellas with the kilts and stuff.
Yeah.
And half of the enemies that come at you, because obviously, you know, criticisms about, oh, it's too easy, just keep pushing counter or kill all the time. Also, what they've done is they've overcompensated with half of the enemies are people that will just catch your fist and then headbutt you if you try that. So you're having to sort of, it just becomes awkward and time-consuming to take down a lot of these enemies. And all the time you're fighting, then other patrols are getting nearer and eventually they'll see you and start having a go. And then they do this firing squad every so often as well.
That's good. Way to get rid of any of the ones you find it hard to kill.
Yeah, but I can't. They do that just as I'm about to kill the bloke I should be grabbing to use as a human shield. So then, anyway, I found a way to get through all that. The officers and the grenadier boss types. You use the rope dart. The sort of dagger on a rope that is a new weapon in this one. You just throw that at them and it pulls them over forward and then you can stab them. So, and it's not hugely technical, but it just goes on and on and on. And I suppose it's like any 5-star wanted system, isn't it? The point is not to keep fighting and win because it will just send, it will send stuff. I see the red dots literally appearing on the minimap as it's spawning new soldiers in. It just does not want me to win this fight ever. And that just annoys me because I feel I ought to. I'm not running away from these. They're just computer game monsters. But yeah, it makes it just really difficult to escape from them and find a hay cart or whatever. But yeah, just the killing goes on and on and on. And I find myself sort of hypnotised by it almost into this because it's very quick time combo based. It's about the right button at the right time. And so I get this real tunnel vision and I start zoning out and while I'm doing this stuff and it just becomes this like floating lucid dream of pressing X and pressing Y and pulling the trigger and so on. And I honestly looked up and last fight I'd been doing it for 45 minutes.
Wow.
That was insane. I just did not stop. And I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to just die and lose or run away. And so I was fighting back. And 45 minutes later, I think some quirk of how the fight had moved slightly, because, you know, you're quite mobile with it all, had moved the fight just slightly off of a patrol path. And it managed to let me break this unending cycle of British slaughter.
And you're a monster.
That terrified me a bit. Yeah, I am a monster. So I'd like to see the redcoats like run away when they're obviously lost about 30 or 40 people.
Before they do run away again, I think.
Good, because they just totally overcompensated back the wrong way again for three. I mean, yeah, it was almost parody in the first game where you're just there constantly doing, you know, counter kill for like 15, 20 minutes. But it just seems to be back and then some in this one because because the patrols are just such so bigger and so much more frequent. And this is in a New York and a Boston that I apparently liberated, finger quotes. So I don't even know what that does. Perhaps there's some plot stuff that changes things later on. I don't know. I'm still going on, but I'm losing a bit of patience with the open world roaming side thing. I feel myself focusing in on the story a lot more now, with the intention of, now I'd just quite like for it to be getting on with itself and getting out of my way now, you know. I don't know if that's a bad sign or I'm just losing patience with the whole thing. Obviously, there's an Assassin's Creed 4 to look out for.
And Liberation in between.
That's sort of Vita thing.
No, it's on the consoles and PC as well now.
On PC? Well, I might have a look. But apparently there's a fifth game. And I'm
wondering... There's two out this year.
Two?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's one for the 360 and PS3, and one for the Xbox One, PS4 and PC. Don't know if the other one's on PC as well. They haven't said.
Okay.
And the big one for the next-gen consoles is in Revolutionary France.
I never thought I'd say this, but I think I might be getting a bit bored of Assassin's Creed.
That's because you haven't played 4.
Maybe 4's the best game ever.
4 fixes everything, because you stop doing any assassining bollocks, because you're not actually an assassin, and you just wander around finding hidden treasure like a proper pirate should.
Well, mostly, that's fine. I mean, I could quite ever go at a pirate game, but mostly I just want to find out what's going on with the whole overstory, the whole present-day Desmond and the precursors
that
thing.
That all finishes up in this story,
driving me at the moment. I mean, Haytham's a cool character, and it's great, you know, yomping around with him, but Connor himself, as you've said on previous shows, is not terribly engaged, endearing compared to Ezio or even Altair. You know, he's a well-meaning, simple country bumpkin who's found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's a bit wooden with it all. And you know, you don't feel that as much development going on there, despite this being, you know, you get an interesting story about the division between him and his father and all the rest of it. I don't know. I'm still playing it, but you know, wouldn't mind it being over at some point in the next couple of
weeks.
Don't
worry, the game ends with something which will make you really happy.
Good. Okay, you can talk about a thing.
I'm going to talk about Infamous Second Son.
Okay.
Which is released this week.
New Infamous game.
Hmm. Yes.
You like these, don't you?
I do. I have a love-hate relationship with them.
Yeah.
I despise some bits of them.
Yeah.
I find some bits of them comically bad.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I really, really like them.
Yeah.
And this is set many years after the end of the last game.
Okay.
Where the infected conduit people have... there's a lot more of them around, and they're everywhere, and the government is going out of their way to stop them a lot more than
them. Okay.
Because the last game ended up with some badness happening.
Yeah.
And most of them died, but a few of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this one, you are this annoyingly brattish kid whose brother is the local sheriff,
mm-hmm.
and you end up going to Seattle after you get some powers, and then you get involved in this, and you're just basically, for reasons which never quite make clear, trying to get more powers.
Because of some plot,
And you spend all your time going around trying to upgrade your powers. Now, before, you know, with the game was stuff like the powers were... electricity and things like that. This has an interesting set of powers. You start off with smoke.
Mm.
Then you get neon.
Eh?
And then you get TV.
What?
Yeah. Well, it's video, not TV.
Good theme, like it. Yeah.
And smoke's a good one. You replenish your energy by drawing from a source which is nearby. Like, back when there's electricity, you'd stand next to any electricity source,
mm-hmm.
Push a button, and it
junction
would draw
boxes and stuff,
and draw the power from that, and the light would go out. At least it starts with smoke. So when you're up on the roofs, you get smoke from
quickly. I need to find a chimney.
Brilliantly.
Yeah.
During a battle, when you destroy a vehicle, you can have it smoke.
Smoke.
Yeah.
That's a weird superpower.
Yeah. And neon.
Neon. Right.
You can draw the power from neon and only neon.
So that's just electricity, but with a lot more restrictions.
Yeah. Yes. Luckily, there's lots of neon signs.
Good job, neon man.
And video's weird, because you take everything from... You have to find a video screen, and you can take it from that.
So that's also just electricity, but with a very limited subset of restrictions.
It's weird. There's no logic to this.
Quickly turn the TV on. I'm growing weaker.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that has been on TV as well.
Good work, TV man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you take the picture off the TV.
It's all sounding a bit... what?
Yeah. I don't understand it.
Right.
It's a little bit...
Oh, why not?
It's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, go for it.
Now, this is a next-gen game.
Is it?
It's a PlayStation exclusive.
Ooh.
So it actually does look rather good. Although
it's one of the first big things we've seen written specifically for the PS4.
It's the first big PS4 exclusive since launch.
Yeah.
It launched with stuff like an important Killzone and whatnot.
Important showcase, then, I think.
And it does look good. The world's big. well, the world's not as big as it could be, but you can see a long distance. At one point, you have to climb up the Space Needle in Seattle.
Right.
And from up there, you get to see an awful lot of the world.
And suck the television off the top of it.
You destroy a communication through that stage, but yeah. And so it looks good. The only problem is it's an Infamous game, so the animation looks like it's done by an idiot.
Ah, right, okay.
It's all rather a bit clunky.
They should fire their animators and hire some real ones.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And the plot is ludicrous.
Yeah.
The acting's okay.
It's not such a bad thing necessarily, as long as the rest of it's fun, though.
And the game itself is really, really fun, and it is good, and it works, and I like it, except for one tiny, tiny problem.
Yeah.
It has the infamous problem of really bad boss fights.
Oh, wow, yeah. I remember watching you do one from the first game. It was a big sort of car monster made of rocks or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
this one, the one that really annoyed me last night... to the point of, I don't know why I play these games anymore, was I was fighting a big video angel.
Right.
Angel made up of video. In this virtual reality type place, I think, a different realm, which is basically all lava.
And
you have to, and you have to jump around on different platforms on it. And occasionally, some of the platforms will go down and some will go up. And so you then have to move across and get there. And
do you sink if you go in the lava and go on fire? Yeah. Do you know the interesting thing about lava is that it's molten rock with the same density as rock because the material hasn't gone anywhere.
Yeah, you can't sink into lava.
You cannot sink into lava. You'll just sit on top and burn to a crisp very quickly. Probably you'll burn to a crisp way before you even get near the surface of it because of convection.
Yeah, no one ever gets that right.
You cannot sink in lava. You are just literally not dense enough as a human being.
You can float around things.
You can float around coins on lava, probably.
Well, not for long.
Well, they'll melt, yeah.
Yeah, I saw a documentary about that.
Yeah,
if rings. You have, if, yeah, rings will go. Yeah. Yeah, so the boss fights are awful, but the rest of it's okay. It is to the point where I've just got the video powers last night. You get the video powers.
Are there
from
more,
the boss
more wacky powers to come?
I don't think
donut
so.
Donut powers.
There's not
or
enough room on the tree to add
the ability
more
to control wheel nuts with your mind. And only wheel nuts.
Yeah. Actually, I wouldn't put it past them.
Do you think they just sat there in a planning meeting and just brainstormed the most bonkers out there superpowers that they could possibly think of?
I got your beat. We can have video.
What does that even mean? I don't know, but we're going to put it in.
The fourth one's 80s pop.
Awesome.
Stock Aitman and Waterman are the only source of power you can get.
Uh-huh.
You're just hanging around waiting to be Rickrolled because that'll give you the power.
Can only be powered by Rickrolling. Wow. What would be your kryptonite?
Good music.
Any music that wasn't Rick Astley. Yeah. That's a worst superpower ever.
Yeah, and these are all the worst superpowers ever.
Yes, jolly good.
But it works, it's fun.
Yeah, that's all right. That's what matters.
Yeah, there's some annoying things, like you get the ability to run up buildings, but so many buildings have an overhang. So you run up and then you can't get past the overhang. Yeah. Design your world better. Mm-hmm. It looks good, plays well, is quite fun. I'll probably
How does smoke, 80s pop or video allow you to run up buildings?
Oh, that's neon.
That's the neon power.
The neon.
Lets you run up buildings.
Yeah. Oh, you find somebody else with neon power, and it is brilliant the way, when she runs around, you leave a trail when you're in there.
Is it like the light bikes from Tron?
Sort of.
But trying to box her in and get her to run into a wall.
You see her bouncing around, and it leaves an outline every couple of frames, so it looks like it's fantastic.
Fair enough.
But silly.
Leave your reason at the door.
Yeah. It's a good game. It's fun. If you liked the previous Infamouses, you will. If you didn't, there's nothing new. You
Fair
won't
enough.
Like it now.
Right.
So, yeah, you're
okay.
Going.
I'm going to talk about the Old Republic a bit briefly. We've got to Alderaan.
Ooh.
Yes, Alderaan, because this is what happens like 3,000 years before Alderaan being blown up. We can actually go and see what Alderaan looks like.
Good.
Apparently it's your archetypal MMO high alpine zone with some snow and some alpine trees and grasslands and things. Yes, it's lovely. It'd be a shame if anything happened to it.
Nice planet.
I know. It's populated by ant people.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, humanoid ants.
I
just sentient enough to shoot you with guns, but
I
otherwise...
I don't remember Leia having an antenna.
No, presumably they were all exterminated by her forefathers before her time, so she didn't have to worry about being chased around by giant ant hives and stuff. It's all right. I'm sort of losing any kind of distinction between all these planets. Apparently, I've outleveled Tatooine without ever being there, because we keep doing a lot of flashpoint stuff, with bonus XP and all the rest of it. And next thing I know, I turn around and I'm needing to shop from the Alderaan vendor for my commendation mark things for the slots for my equipment. And I looked at the Tatooine vendor and I thought, Christ, I should have gone to Tatooine. Yeah, so I haven't been. I don't know what it's like. Sandy, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's the obvious set piece for any Star Wars adventure, isn't it?
There'll
be some reason why you need to go to a dirt end nowhere desert ball.
the primary
industry, ironically enough, is water. Yeah. Moisture evaporators. Hey, great.
Yes, because you know,
why not go to an ocean planet? There's probably quite a lot more water there that can be more efficiently harvested. We're going to go to the most deserty planet we know of, and we're going to put bloody great wind turbine harvester things on there because we read Dune once and thought it was cool.
The whole point of Tatooine in the entire thing, all the films, it is an out-of-the-way place which nobody would dream of going
to. It's the most unlikely place ever that the important documents would find their way to, and that's where the hook for. So, but no, it's not a Star Wars adventure unless you've been to Tatooine at least once.
I'm fed up with Star Wars.
I get fed up with everything. I'm exceedingly ranty today. Yeah. I don't know why. Must be something in the air. Tactical flashpoint again, I've written there. We're getting pretty good at the Kuat drive yards now, which is, you know, the mix and match, any level team can all join and play together. And that's the only activity that we as a static group guild can now do together, because we've separated in so far apart in levels, and we've mixed up and got wrong our class selections in the back, and some people have changed classes and so on. And so now the only thing we can do to effectively play together as a group of friends, and this is four at a time, mind you, is the Kuat Drive Yard's tactical flashpoints over and over.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
Well, we could do some PvP, I suppose, but you can join that as a team.
I hate MMOs. They keep doing this.
MMOs have so much potential, but they do go out of their way to keep friends from playing together. And I don't even know if it's a deliberate thing or an accidental thing, just because that's how MMOs are. I've ranted about this a lot.
Other games don't try and do that. Call of Duty doesn't try and stop you playing with the people you like playing with a lot, because some of them are more popular.
You haven't played as much as you, so you have to go over there, and you have to go over there, and you've got the wrong sort of equipment because you like doing something. You like doing the same sorts of things your friend likes doing, so you can't be in the same team together.
Stupid games.
I hate it all. I've written Cadamino there. I didn't know if I spelled that right. That one of the rare occasions we got four players together who were the compatible levels and able to do an old school dungeon, we went to a place called Cadamino, which was, as far as I could tell, it's exactly the same tile set and layout as Coruscant and Nar Shaddaa, only they've gone with brown lighting instead of green or purple.
Yep.
It's the archetypal over-industrialised urban metroplex there, with just lots of metal corridors and no trees in sight. Lots of very high walkways with monsters wandering backwards and forwards. And of course, there's me with push force powers. So we had a lot of fun actually in that one. It's a lot of fun. Almost everyone in the team had something that could punt an enemy over the handrail and just make them disappear. And we basically just ignored the plot and the main whatever the hell it was about. And
it does make looting hard.
Went in there. Yeah, you pay for it in loot, but it's just so worth it in satisfaction though. So yeah, we were taking turns to try and punt monsters off the edges of very high walkways and have them disappear, which was good. I don't even remember what the end boss of that place was like, and I can't quite remember why we were there in the first place. I just ran forward with my lightsaber hitting things. The backstory and the fourth pillar, which is the Old Republic, seems to have lost a lot of traction with me. I just go in there and hit things with a lightsaber now, and I'm gotten to the point where I'm starting to press just mash space to get through the dialogue, which is terrible because they spent $200 million putting that dialogue together for me.
Yeah.
I feel quite ungrateful.
I wouldn't worry about it.
I don't know. It's all right. It's a standard MMO of the type. But the last thing you want in a static group situation with voice, where you're all on voice chat, is the game itself trying to be all dramatic at you personally, not you. It lets the rest of your team come and sit in on your little conversations with these people. But everyone's just yammering away on TeamSpeak, and I'd much rather listen to my friends than some you know, Radio 4 Archer's actor who's just between jobs, which a lot of the Sith side are.
Yeah.
I know why it cost $200 million to make. It's because they hired the entire of Radio 4 for about 4 months to make the...
Who does Sandy Toksvig play?
Sandy Toksvig's the Emperor, I believe. Huh. It's quite an interesting spoilerific revelation. So we're still playing there, and yes. Why don't you talk about something?
I'm going to talk about Goddess.
Go on, then.
They released a new version of Goddess.
Yeah.
2.0. Beta 2.0.
What?
They've gone back and retooled it, and they've removed some of the clicking. And by some of the clicking, they've removed all of the clicking.
I understood that there was a large backlash against Goddess because apparently it was too clicky.
Yeah, now there's no clicking.
Then there's no clicking at all.
Dragging instead.
And right.
I'm finding the dragging less engaging than the clicking.
You want the clicking back?
I want some clicking back, yes.
Do you think there's a halfway house where you can drag sometimes and click other times?
It turns out the clicking is actually quite an important mechanic. I think. Goddess is an interesting game. It's got good ideas, but it has this slight problem, which is the entire God game genre is broken and always has been. We just didn't realise it at the time. I went back and played some Populous.
Yeah.
You know what? That's mostly a dull game.
Are you going to say... You can't say bad things about Populous.
I can.
Not with people listening.
I can and I will and I have.
You go out somewhere in the remote wilderness and stand on a hill and shout it as long as no one hears. You can't say it in polite company. Certainly not on a podcast.
All the complaints people are making about Goddess now... exactly the same complaints you can make about Populous.
Populous is pretty dull, actually. I think I played it fairly recently. I can't remember what version, if it was some Spectrum emulator or Amiga emulator, or whether I was actually found a PC thing. I don't know. For some
I got given a PC version from Origin. It was on a Humble Bundle. Or so. It was the EA's Humble Bundle.
I don't know where I came across it, but I was playing the original Populous, and it's really boring, isn't it?
It's
a game where you have to race to make the flattest, largest plane possible against a computer opponent.
And
if you make your bit flatter quicker than the other person's flatter. It's basically a landscape gardening game.
And Goddess is exactly the same, only there's no computer
only it's
player
got
against.
A lot more funky, modernised graphics.
Yeah, and
no computer opponent.
No.
Wow, that was the only source of tension and drama
It's a big multiplayer game,
right.
But the multiplayer hasn't gone
what
online
happens
yet.
When the entire Goddess world is just a glassy,
so all,
flat
all
ball?
All you have to do is flatten everything out and collect cards to be able to unlock new technologies.
Mm.
And it's not fun.
Well,
and it's less fun without the clicking.
The flattening everything needs to be a means to an end, which is defeating an opponent, generally. I mean, the whole point of Populous was you were a goodly god versus an evil god, and you're both using the same tools to try and assert dominance.
Yeah, what Goddess needs to do is add the game in.
Yeah.
It needs to actually have
game. It's only on version 2.0, eh?
Yeah, beta 2.0.
You can't do that! It's not 0.2! 1.0 is release.
Yeah, well, if it's been released and you can pay for it, it's released.
God, I feel
you
like
can release betas now.
Going all Judge Dredd on this sort of thing.
Yeah, so Goddess still not fun, but it does have potential. But I've got a horrible feeling it's just going to destroy my memories of every good game ever.
Also, I think this has been knocking around in open beta finger quotes for so long. I think most people are not going to have the patience to wait for a finished game.
Yeah.
Everyone who's remotely interested in this has already played it to death.
It needs to get the multiplayer in, and the multiplayer has to be good.
I think they definitely overextended how long any kind of reasonable open beta could ask for.
And people just thought they wanted God games, but they don't actually.
Well, that's a useful lesson then, if we've learned nothing else from the whole experience.
Yeah, the God game needs
it. It means when we bitch and whine on forums, we'll ask for some different sort of game now.
Yep,
Fair enough. I'm going to talk about PlanetSide 2. I'm actually enjoying that.
Shocking.
Well, it's...
Because you moan about it. Every time we go to the pub.
Yeah. And also last show, I was quite unkind about it all as well.
But I don't listen to
every
that.
Time I talk about it on the show and say I've had enough and I feel like a break, it actually gets really good again. So it's the Stalker cloaking. I'm loving the Stalker cloaking. Suddenly it's playing like Splinter Cell or Thief or whatever, and I'm just basically an invisible ninja assassin. And it's much, much better for my gameplay style, which is essentially a non-confrontational, cowardly kind of... I'd much rather be an observer than a participant, but if I have to participate, I'd much rather have... a kind of really hefty head start on the one-on-one gun battle, like, you know, seeing them and having lined up and aimed and everything.
A smaller number of kills, but each one's handcrafted.
Oh, yeah. My KD's gone up. I'm about 1.5 or so.
Wow.
Stalker cloaking.
That's getting close to competent.
I think what I am noticing, though, is that the kills I'm making are the same people over and over.
Oh.
Yes.
Have they noticed?
I guess they do. I haven't been sent any hate tells yet, but it's the same. Typically, as a stalker cloaker, you will end up killing the same person two or three times in a row until they learn not to hide in that corner anymore. And I sort of feel a bit bad about it. Sometimes I feel like I ought to let them just live and go find someone else. But no, they come running back from the spawn room, you know, effing and blinding in their room at home, probably. And then they'll go and hide behind exactly the same box again. I'm seeing a few people using the flashlights, but I don't think the reign of invisible terror has taken a heavy enough toll for them to become standard issue yet. Most people would still rather have a laser sight, which makes their crosshairs smaller, that sort of thing, because that's the slot you have to swap. You can choose to have the torch, and that replaces things like the... I think it replaces the laser sight generally on most guns, and the laser sight is... It's a cosmetic thing, but it actually just makes the cone of fire circle smaller.
Yeah.
You know, so it just literally makes your shooting more accurate. And you have to choose not to have that and have the torch instead. So I suppose, you know, it depends how often you're murdered from behind by invisible ninja assassins.
Frequently, it sounds.
I don't know. I don't see many people stalker cloaking and putting the motion tracking things down. I think a lot of the career infiltrators are still chasing around with the normal cloak and the machine gun. I don't know. I'm getting reasonably good with the pistols as well, the mighty Beamer, and we were playing NC for the last sort of week or so, and they get the much more powerful sort of bigger per hit shot, slower refire rate pistol, but still very good. You need to put the suppressor on it, the silencer effectively, because otherwise when you shoot you'll appear on their minimap. Yeah. There's a dot, and you can put the laser sight on the pistol. Most people don't bother because who uses a pistol? Yeah. But the only people who use pistols are stalking cloakers, so the laser sight makes you a bit more accurate with it. But mostly it's absolutely about positional play. It's about knowing the layouts, and that's helping because we've been playing a bit more on these new bases and are starting to learn our way around. But you have to basically be able to work out where are people going to go to cover when they're shot at.
I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you're cloaked,
yep,
and you use a laser pointer,
yep,
doesn't it work both ways?
No, when you cloak, the laser disappears as well. Okay. As the gun and everything else you're holding. They thought of that, yeah.
Right.
It's just a brilliant laser beam coming from nowhere. Although it should do that, like Predators, like proper light. Yeah. Predator thing, you know. You can actually turn the laser sight off as well. It's a cosmetics. It literally has a big laser beam coming out of it, a big red laser beam, which wouldn't happen in real life because you need mist or smoke to see the laser. But you can push X to toggle the visible cosmetic laser off. It turns the laser off, but it still maintains the ability. You know, you still get so most people turn the beam off, because what I've found in a couple of times is I've managed to find out where people are because they've been hiding behind a box, but this big laser beam's been sticking out the side. So absolutely, people, if you're using the laser sight on any gun, make sure to push X to toggle the visible portion of the laser off, because people can see it from a very long way away. If you turn the laser beam itself off, it doesn't change the stats or anything, so you still get the full benefit of it. It's just stupid. It looks cool in the warp gate, whatever. There's been a bit of an invulnerability exploit I've been reading about and hearing about.
I saw some ranting.
Yeah, I haven't actually come across it or encountered it myself.
But coincidentally, you also haven't been killed for days.
My KD is about 5,000 now, yeah. Basically there was some problem with, I believe it's warp gate invulnerability persisting outside the warp gate. So basically individual players would, for some reason, I've no idea how you do it, you'd actually end up invulnerable as you left the warp gate. Same as if you were still in the warp gate. So basically, it just meant that people couldn't kill you. You can kill with impunity. And apparently, a couple of them have been chasing a few of our people around, and you know, some angry tweetage about it all. What Sony have done, I think, is genius. They've fixed this by removing invulnerability from the entire game.
Yeah,
you're no longer invulnerable in the warp gate or in VR.
That's a really quick fix.
Well, they did say on the patch notes that this is what they're going to do while they investigate. Yeah. They're obviously going to try and find out what's actually gone wrong. But now you're not invulnerable in the warp gate. And I thought that was going to be a horrific nightmare of team killing mayhem inside the warp gates. But it doesn't seem to have made much difference, to be honest. There's a couple of people taking the occasional pot shot. We did some science.
Yeah.
One of our trusty comrades shot me a couple of times and it really hurt. So, yeah, we proved that the warp gate invulnerability was gone. I think there's some minor sub campaign to try and keep invulnerability off in VR, because that would then allow people to actually do proper dogfight practice with planes and things in there against each other, you know, by mutual consent, I suppose. But you're balancing the annoyance of griefing against the the utility of being able to actually do proper live fire practice in the VR with the planes, because getting good at aircraft is difficult because the respawning involved is quite hectic. You know, it's quite a lengthy amount of time. You need quite a lot of aircraft points each time. So if you take a scythe up, go for a dogfight and are immediately shot down, you have to sit around for 15 minutes potentially before you can have another go at getting better at it. In VR, you can take as many planes as often as you like, but when you shoot another plane, it doesn't do anything. It just keeps giving you, it keeps spamming the do not shoot friendly players and doesn't actually do any damage to them. So if two of you wanted to go out there and just actually, you know, do some solid air fight, dog fighting practice, then it's easier if you could still do damage. So it's a bit day-to-day planet side. I was playing it a few times solo as well during the week, so, you know, these things come and go. So we've seen some news about an upcoming new plane, the Valkyrie. We just watched the old video with Higby, or whatever his name is, talking about it and showing some footage of what it'll look like. It's very much the sort of Apocalypse Now hanging out the side with the machine gun, gunship, helicopter, pick-up, drop-off type of affair, I think.
Yes.
I'm guessing the flight profile will be very much like the existing planes. It'll be somewhere a bit more nimble than the Liberator, but probably not as crazy as the Scythes or Reavers or whatever.
Yeah, and lots of people on it with heavy weapons shooting out, probably.
Yeah, you get a pilot, dedicated pilot, dedicated gunner, they're in a canopy, and then you've literally got open sides like the dropships in the prequel Star Wars films, or, you know, helicopters used in Vietnam and stuff. You would actually...
I would have gone to the real-life examples before going to Star Wars.
Whatever, priorities, man.
You don't even like Star Wars.
I don't even like Vietnam.
It's quite a nice country.
You have two people who will be rumble seated. You'll literally be sitting on the hanging off the sides of it with your normal guns firing out of the thing, and then you'll be able to jump out and in as needed. So that'd be interesting. But as I just looked at that and I thought, wow, burster clocks are going to come quite early. So I don't know what you did, because the problem with Galaxy is that it's such a lumbering thing, and it's generally an over the top choice for a small squad. This thing will be much better. It's a 4-man aircraft that's useful for getting small squads about, and probably a bit more nimble and easier to manage than the Galaxy. But the thing, the Galaxy has a vast amount of hit points, so it can usually drop people off and get clear before it's blown up by all but the most concerted focused fire. Whereas these things, I don't know how durable they'll be. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, I don't recommend using these, because I actually have personal experience being in a military helicopter with the doors open and facing out, and it is cold, noisy, and not pleasant.
So there you go. Yeah, they're talking about mission system. I have no idea what that even is. I guess that'd be like miniature alerts that only last like 10 minutes or something. Capture base X, I suppose.
Most likely.
Something like that. They talk about outfit base capture. I have no idea what that even means in any kind of meaningful context. Guildhouse? Yay! No. I don't know. It just means you'll be able to stick your guild logo on the flags. We captured this base, I suppose. Your outfit there. I don't imagine... Well, I mean, 5 rounds rapid. We could certainly have a go at some of the smaller bases and capture them. But I'm wondering is that... Typically, when that sort of thing appears in a territorial conflict PvP game, it usually is more along the lines of an implied garrisoning. You know, you'll pick a base and claim it with so many points or whatever, and then it's up to you to try and keep hold of it. So I don't know if that's going to work with the more casual nature of Planetside. That sounds like... I don't know, some weird... alarm clock ops type nonsense.
I don't know.
We'll have to see. Wait and see. A couple of the gang on 5 Rounds Rapid, they're getting a bit fed up with it all, though, so I think we're probably looking at a more reduced presence for a few weeks until we get some big new features in. We've been waiting a very long time for some interesting big new features.
Well, that's because they're busy doing the PS4 version.
All we get at the moment is wacky base redesigns, which are a bit annoying. So, apparently they're talking about a massive balance pass, head in hands, you know, you have to learn what does what again, all the rest of it. Still enjoying it, though. Mostly, almost entirely, in fact, due to this stalker cloaking thing, the infiltration the way it was done in the first game, which I'm quite liking.
Yeah.
So, how are you?
I'm going to briefly mention I completed Arkham City.
Well done, you.
Again.
Excellent.
Which means I've now completed 13 games
this
year. Or played through.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, this is your big, you must do one a week or something.
Well, it's not one a week. It's see how many I can do.
Okay.
Just so I can tick off all the games.
I'm not sure I've completed any games this year.
Yeah, that's because you keep playing MMOs, which...
Cannot be completed.
The only way to win an MMO is not to play.
Yeah, right.
Arkham City is still fantastic.
Mm.
The boss fights were a lot better than in the first game.
I've only played Asylum. I must get around to City at some point.
City is good. I do like City. There's a fantastic Mr. Freeze fight where you have to use environmental stuff to take him down, which is quite
good. Drag him over the hot air vent, blah, blah,
That's
blah.
That's sort of, you know, electromagnetic burst on the air conditioning heater and stuff. And,
fair enough.
Interesting. Unfortunately, that makes you do one thing too many. Mm. You have to do it about six times. It could really do have just been done five times.
Why can't... That's the problem. It's game designer comes up with clever, interesting feature and then massively overdoes it with repetitions. I want people to appreciate my clever feature. I don't want people to just do it once and then go, wow, that was amazing, and then get on with their lives. No, they must play it many times until they're sick of it. Very annoying.
Yeah.
Do something clever, but don't overdo something clever. There you go.
Yeah, so now I've finished that, I'm ready for the next
What's Batman. Your next thing? What are you going to do next?
Well, I'm ready for the next Batman, to be honest.
What's
I'm
the next thing you're going to try and complete?
Oh, that's going to be Infamous.
Infamous.
Because I'm nearly there.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That'll be next thing you're likely to take off.
I need to finish my Infamous 2 Evil playthrough. I'm actually playing Second Son as Evil.
Okay. Straight out of the bat?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know why. I think because the guy...
Makes a change?
The guy you play is a bit of a dick and I don't like him.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
So that's that then.
Yeah, I've written where next at the bottom there. I'm feeling a bit restless. I don't know.
Well,
I'm not sure I've got time for anything else, but I'm
just in time for Elder Scrolls Online.
Elder Scrolls Online is just about here, which is great, because that means I'll be able to take a good sort of 6-week holiday in Guild Wars 1, I think. That's going to be my plan. That's where I'm off to, I think. I don't know. It's finding the time. I don't know if it's time to juggle stuff about. I mean, perhaps I'm just going through a bit of a meh week, or whether some of these games are starting to outlive their interestingness.
Yeah, you do keep playing the same games again and again.
Yeah, but that's what I do anyway, and that's generally, in itself, not necessarily a bad thing, because I do quite like mindless repetition, but... When it loses its pull even for me, then perhaps things need to change. I don't know. What did you learn this week?
I learnt this week that when Epic announce a new game called Unreal, all you get is a bunch of source code.
Okay. And I learnt this week that the Tories are playing absolutely from George Orwell, without any trace of irony. That beer and bingo thing was fantastic.
Yes, that was.
don't normally like to get into politics, but that was just too amusing.
Does anyone want a government? Because we're a bit fed up with our one.
Let's swap you ours. Okay, so do your spiel.
You can go along to howtomurdertime.com where you can see comments and listen to the music episode that went out the other day. You can.
Oh, yeah. My Christmas mixtape has finally arrived.
Yes.
Back from the printers.
Yeah, you can also go along to iTunes and leave us a review because apparently iTunes reviews are something that people still do.
I didn't even know iTunes was still a thing.
iTunes is still a thing, unfortunately. Mm. It needs to not be a thing, but it isn't. You can also catch me on Moving On. Last week, what did I watch last week?
Oh, I actually listened to it, but I forgot.
I've forgotten. It can't have been that good.
Was it Red Sonja? No.
No. Oh,
Free
Enterprise, yes.
Yes.
God, that is an awful film.
Yes.
That's why I've forgotten it.
There was a lot of ranting.
Yeah, and this week's going to be Bad Taste.
Bad Taste, right. That Peter Jackson's early work.
Yeah, shot on a camcorder, basically. Fantastic. Not everyone on the show agrees with me.
Mm-hmm.
You could also catch me on The Brainstorm on Thursdays, where fantastic...
As far as I can tell, you basically spend all your time baiting the NSA.
Yep.
Mm. That's going to come back and bite you at some point, I think.
Sometimes I bait Putin as well.
There'll be black helicopters and that'll be it. John who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and you can also do other stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
I've lost track of where I was.
You can do other stuff. There you go, dear listener. You can also do other stuff.
Feel free to do other stuff rather than just listen to us throughout your
We've
week.
We've given you permission to do other things.
Use
this wisely and responsibly.
Yeah. You can also go along to Steam and join the Steam group and stuff.
Should we stop talking?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right. See you next time.
Goodbye.